Canto 10, chapter 77, verses 137, the whole chapter, Lord Krishna slays Shalva. Verse 1. Shishupavacha sa upaspisha saligam nang shito titakarmaka nayamam tiyo machapasham irasit yahasaratim. Shukadeva Goswami said, after refreshing himself with water, putting on his armor, and picking up his bow, Lord Pradyumna told his driver, take me back to where the hero Juman is standing. Mukam karati vachalam. What comes next? Pango pango langaya tegim yaki pantamam vande shigurum tirutaranam. Om agyana chimirandasya gyananjara shakaya chakshur mitam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So what do you remember from the last chapter, Shalva? Yes. So Shalva had a grudge way back from Rukmini's Swayambar ceremony. And that's why he was defeated by Krishna then. Yes?
He did tapasya by eating a handful of dust
every day.
And he didn't get Lord Shiva's benediction until after he'd done that for a year.
A whole year of eating dust. Determined demons we have here. Very determined. Where did he ever think of it? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he had to uphold the Dharma, or the rule that if someone surrenders, you have to give them a benediction. Okay. He didn't really want it. He knew it was going to be useless anyway, but he knew that it's his duty as a demigod to give benedictions to those who come and worship him. So therefore, he had to do that. Yes. Okay. Anything else on chapter 76? Yeah. He got taken off the battlefield. 2 hours he was unconscious. Yeah. Yeah. That was... Right. He became so angry at his driver, poor son of Daruka. And he was only doing his duty according to the rules. Okay, anything else? Yes. Maya Dhanava made an iron city flying. Airplane. Yeah, Bambara Dwarka. Okay, so now Pradyumna is up. Take me back to the battlefield. Purport, Pradyumna is eager to rectify the discrepancy of his having left the battlefield when his chariot driver carried him away unconscious. So, for the fault of his chariot driver, he feels responsible also. If your servant does something, then the master is responsible if the servant does something wrong. So he felt like it was his fault that he left the battlefield. He's not saying, oh, my driver. He says, I must rectify this discrepancy now. I left the battlefield, so I must now rectify this. In Pradyumna's absence, Juman had been devastating his army, but now Pradyumna counterattacked Juman and, smiling, pierced him with 8 Naracha arrows. Purport, Shri Vishnu Chakravarti comments that Pradyumna challenged Juman, saying, now see if you can strike me. After saying this and allowing Juman to shoot his arrows, Pradyumna released his own deadly arrows. So, you know, the battlefield was not impersonal. They were talking to each other, the people who they were killing. And they were actually having conversations with the people they were killing, who were killing each other. They were talking. And they were. It was not, you know, now it's so impersonal. You don't even see who you're killing. You don't even know who you're killing. It's just like hit and miss. It can be anyone. It can be. With 4 of these arrows, he struck Juman's 4 horses. With 1 arrow, his driver. With 2 more arrows, his bow and chariot flag, and with the last arrow, Juman's head. So that was fast. Gada, Satiki, Samba, and others began killing Shalva's army, and thus all the soldiers inside the airship began falling into the ocean, their necks severed. as the Yadus and Shalva's followers thus went on attacking one another. The tumultuous, fearsome battle continued for 27 days and nights. You know, it's always 27 somehow or other, or 28. It's like, last time it was Bhima and Jarasandha, it was 27. And on the 28th day, he killed... And there was another 20... Jambavan was fighting with Krishna for 28 days. I guess it's according to the moon, 1 month. It's like 1 month, according to the moon, huh?
Also, it's similar to what the psychologists say, that it takes about 1 month to form a new habit.
Adi Purush says, according to the psychologist, it takes 1 month to form a new habit. Yeah, that's from the japa thing, right?
28 days.
Yeah. Just think of that. What can you do in 28 days?
If I remember Krishna for 28 days, I'll remember him for the rest of my life.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it. No, the psychology is this, that if you do something for 1 month, a new habit... If you do a new habit for 1 month, it's harder to go back to your old ways than it is to continue. Well, we do it in the japa, actually. It's this whole process. 1 week, you just observe your old habit. You don't do anything. And then the second week, you pray and meditate on how you're going to change and what the change will be. And you make a determination. And then for 1 month, you actually do it. You make that change. So like for japa, for example, there are different categories of observation. So how many rounds do you chant in one place? How many rounds do you chant without interruption? How many rounds do you chant? How many rounds do you chant before your day starts? You know, so these are like habits. And I found it very, very useful. And there's a quantity and then there's quality. There's qualitative things too. And like... how prayerful, how many, you know, all this, these different...
That's called, it's a relief, it's killing.
Yeah, this is only... Well, I understand. But don't worry about it, it's okay. 27 days is what we're talking about. That's the topic. Yeah. Yeah, okay. 27 days and nights. Invited by Yudhisthira, the son of Dharma, Lord Krishna had gone to Indraprastha. Now that the Rajasi sacrifice had been completed and Shishupala killed, the Lord began to see inauspicious omens, so he took leave of the Kuru elders and the great sages and also of Prita and her sons and returned to Dwaraka. The Lord said to himself, because I have come here with my respected elder brother, see there it's Balaram's with him over here, kings partial to Shishupala may well be attacking my capital city. Yes. And so actually it was happening. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after he arrived at Dwaraka and saw how his people were threatened with destruction, and also saw Shalva and his Selva airship, Lakeshava arranged for the city's defense and then addressed Dwaraka as follows. So purport, how did he arrange for the defense? Lakeshava placed Shri Balaram in a strategic position to guard the city. And he also appointed a special guard for Sri Rukmini and the other queens inside the palaces. According to Sri Vishnu Chakravarti, by a secret route, special soldiers conveyed the queens to safety inside Dwaraka. So he made all these different arrangements, first for defense. Lord Krishna said, O driver, quickly take my chariot near Shalva. This lord of Selva is a powerful magician. Don't let him bewilder you. And it's interesting he should say that because Krishna himself is going to be bewildered for a moment. Or is he? It seems that he will become bewildered, but some say no, he can never be bewildered. And this is some debate going on here. Thus ordered, Dwaraka took command of the lord's chariot and drove forth. As the chariot entered the battlefield, everyone there, both friend and foe, caught sight of the emblem of Garuda. When Shalva, the master of a decimated army, decimated, everybody know what that means? It means no army. It was finished, or most of it was finished. It was like
broken
to pieces. Yeah, his army was really destroyed. Something might have been there, but not much. The master of a decimated army saw Lord Krishna approaching. He hurled his spear at the Lord's charioteer. So they always...
They're actually, always. Decimated, in French, it refers to cutting the head.
Oh, interesting. Decimated. In English, it would just mean like you, most of it's destroyed.
It was a mess.
Were
killed, and so everybody's running around.
Yeah. Okay. Like all confused. Headless.
Literally, it means where every tenth person was destroyed.
So, one tenth of the Desa is 10. Literally, it means where every tenth person is destroyed.
But it means where a large part is destroyed.
Yeah. The usual normal meaning is a large part is destroyed. It's a mess. Shalva's hurtling spear lit up the whole sky like a mighty meteor. But Lord Shauri tore the great weapon into hundreds of pieces with his arrows. Lord Krishna then pierced Shalva with 16 arrows and struck the Salva airship with a deluge of arrows as it darted about the sky. Firing his arrows, the Lord appeared like the sun flooding the heavens with its rays. So if you imagine the sunshine and how the rays are coming, then you can understand. Imagine. We don't see the sun these days. So you have to imagine how the rays are coming. And that's how Krishna was shooting. Shalva then managed to strike Lord Krishna's left arm, which held his bow Sharanga, and amazingly, Sharanga fell from his hand. Oh. Those who witnessed this all cried out in dismay. Then the master of Sauba roared loudly and addressed Lord Janardana. Shalva said, "You fool, because in our presence you kidnapped the bride of our friend Shishupala, your own cousin, and because you later murdered him in the sacred assembly while he was inattentive. Today, with my sharp arrows, I will send you to the land of no return. Though you think yourself invincible, I will kill you now if you dare stand before me." So these are his two grudges, that he kidnapped Rukmini and he killed Shishupala, and that's why he's here today in the battlefield, to get revenge. The Supreme Lord said, "O dullard, you boast in vain, since you fail to see death standing near you. Real heroes do not talk much, but rather show their prowess in action." Having said this, the furious Lord swung his club with frightening power and speed and hit Shalva on the collarbone, making him tremble and vomit blood. But as soon as Lord Achyuta withdrew his club, Shalva disappeared from sight, and a moment later a man approached the Lord. Bowing his head down to him, he announced, "Devaki has sent me," and sobbing spoke the following words. The man said, "O Krishna, Krishna, mighty armed one, who are so affectionate to your parents, Shalva has seized your father and taken him away, as a butcher leads an animal to slaughter." When he heard this disturbing news, Lord Krishna, who was playing the role of a mortal man, showed sorrow and compassion. And out of love for his parents, he spoke the following words like an ordinary conditioned soul. Lord Krishna said, "Balaram is ever vigilant. No demigod or demon can defeat him. So how could this insignificant Shalva defeat him and abduct my father? Indeed, fate is all-powerful." After Govinda spoke these words, the master of Sobha again appeared. So we will hear a lot of commentary on this. Apparently leading Vasudev before the Lord, Shalva then spoke as follows. Shalva said, "Here is your dear father who begot you and for whose sake you are living in this world. I shall now kill him before your very eyes. Save him if you can, weakling." After he had mocked the Lord in this way, the magician, Shalva, appeared to cut off Vasudeva's head with his sword. Taking the head with him, he entered the Salva vehicle, which was hovering in the sky. By nature, Krishna is full of knowledge and he possesses unlimited powers of perception. Yet for a moment, out of great affection for his loved ones, he remained absorbed in the mood of an ordinary human being. He soon recalled, however, that this was all a demonic illusion engineered by Maya Danava and employed by Shalva. So this we will be hearing in a few verses about. Verse 29. Now alert to the actual situation, Lord Achyuta saw before him on the battlefield neither the messenger nor his father's body. It was as if he had awakened from a dream. Seeing his enemy flying above him in his Sabha plane, the Lord then prepared to kill him. Such is the account given by some sages, O wise king, but those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves, having forgotten their own previous statements. So now we will hear a purport. If someone thinks Lord Krishna was actually bewildered by Shalva's magic and the Lord was subjected to ordinary mundane lamentation, such an opinion is illogical and contradictory, since it is well known that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental and absolute. This will be further explained in the following verses. Verse 31. How can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection, or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord, whose perception, knowledge, and power are all similarly infinite? Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, lamentation, aggrievement, and bewilderment are characteristics of conditioned souls. But how can such things affect the person of the Supreme, who is full of knowledge, power, and all opulence? Actually, it is not at all possible that Lord Krishna was misled by the mystic jugglery of Shalva. He was displaying his pastime of playing the role of a human being. Just imagine if he wasn't bewildered. He'll just say, "Ah, I know, it's a trick of Shalva anyway." It wouldn't be so interesting. Actually, it makes it a lot more interesting if you have feelings, you know. He wouldn't have feelings, you know. Krishna has feelings for his parents. Krishna loves his devotees. So this is there. It's not missing. Even though he's God, it's still there in his lila. He has these feelings. All the great Bhagavatam commentators conclude that grief, illusion, attachment, and fear, which arise out of ignorance of the soul, can never be present in the transcendental dramatic pastimes enacted by the Lord. It's not that he was overcome by the mode of ignorance. So this is what they're trying to say. It's not the modes that were affecting him. Srila Jiva Goswami gives many examples from Krishna's pastimes to illustrate this point. For instance, when the cowherd boys entered the mouth of Akasura, Lord Krishna was apparently astonished. Similarly, when Brahma took away Lord Krishna's cowherd friends and calves, the Lord at first began to look for them, as if he did not know where they were. Thus the Lord plays the part of an ordinary human being so as to relish transcendental pastimes with his devotees. One should never think the personality of Godhead is an ordinary person, as Shukadeva Goswami explains in this and the following verse. So just imagine if Brahma took away the calves and the cowherd boys. And Krishna didn't become bewildered and didn't start looking. Why did he do that? Because he wanted to enjoy with Lord Brahma, actually. And then Lord Brahma got really bewildered when Krishna's looking for them. He doesn't know where they are. And, then later on, he expands. He comes back a minute later and then he sees, they're all with Krishna. What's going on here? Then he looks back where he kept the other ones. Yeah, they're still there. It's not those. It's another group. It's another group here. And he went back. And so it's a lot more fun, when Krishna plays like. So that's why, otherwise, if he had just known all along, okay, I knew it was you, Brahma, how come you took my cowherd boys? Give them back right away. Then this whole lila wouldn't have happened. So then Brahma went away, Brahma stole them and went away, and he's watching, okay, Krishna is, it's all right, he doesn't seem to know where they are. So it makes it very relishable when Krishna does things like that. And so here also, he He was expressing lamentation for the death of his father and mother. And so sometimes he appears like he's not all-knowing. Jiva Goswami says this bewilderment is a virtue on his part, and it makes his pastimes more sweet. So that's one reason why he appears bewildered. It makes his pastimes more sweet, Jiva Goswami says. So, you know, he gets tired of being God all the time. He likes to have some, you know, personal relationships with his devotees. And so, therefore, he appears as a human being. So bewilderment brings, because the bewilderment brings to the wise devotees the bliss of spiritual love, the bewilderment is not a fault. So Jiva Goswami says, when Krishna is bewildered, the wise devotees get bliss of spiritual love, and it makes his pastimes more sweet. And that's why he gets, indeed, the Lord voluntarily accepts that bewilderment for that purpose. That his, he makes, it sweetens his pastimes. If he's always God, you know, then what's the fun? Isn't that fun? So I'll read a little bit about Agasura from Sharata Darshini. There's Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives a very good explanation here on what was happening, how Krishna gets bewildered. That when this is when the coward boys are entering the mouth of Agasura. Text 27 of the, I think the 12th chapter, Killing of Agasura. Seeing the boys were helplessly beyond his control, like jewels slipping from one's hands, and they were entering like straws into the fire of the snake's stomach, Krishna became filled with compassion. Krishna was astonished at the actions of his lila, shakti, or of time, in making the cowherd boys enter the serpent's mouth. What was the cause of Krishna's astonishment? The Lord thought, it is not possible for these cowherd boys to have prarabdha karma. Besides, the supersoul does not give them the tendency for karma, because supersoul is my expansion and does not do anything unfavorable to me. Therefore, the lila shakti has made the seemingly unfavorable arrangement with a desire to put me, who abound in prema, in a compassionate mood, karuna rasa, on seeing this unfortunate situation. It astonishes me how she controls me, the very form of all rasas and king of all lilas. So anyway, that, I thought that was interesting to kind of understand why Krishna, how he's thinking when these things happen to him. So in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says the same thing. Krishna is the assurance of safety to everyone. This is again chapter 12. But he was struck with wonder how the external energy works so wonderfully. He then began to consider how he could kill the demon, at the same time save the boys and calves. Although there was no factual concern on Krishna's part, he was thinking like that. And then in Nectar of Devotion, again his feelings, he said to Balaram, when my companions were being devoured by Agasura, hot tears poured down from my eyes. And as they were washing my cheeks, for at least one moment, I completely lost myself. So Krishna lost himself, actually. He confessed to Balaram that I lost myself in this, when the boys were going into Agasura's mouth. So then, Sarata Darshini, Vishnu Chakravarti, how is it possible that Krishna could be bewildered by Shalva's illusions? How are the affection and lamentation for Vasudev caused by this illusion possible? Nor is it possible he could have fear of Shalva. And how is it possible for him to let go of his bow Sharanga by that illusion of Shalva? So there's two things in this lila that were very astonishing, that he dropped his bow and that he was lamenting for the death of Vasudev. Therefore, Shukadev speaks this verse, verse 31. Lamentation and other emotions are of two types, caused by ignorance and caused by knowledge. The emotions described here are possible in people who are ignorant or who do not know everything, who are dependent on wrong sources of knowledge. But how is it possible in the Supreme Lord Krishna, who has unlimited knowledge? So, here's another explanation of why Krishna gets bewildered. Spiritual emotions, such as lamentation, possible in those who have knowledge, who are beyond illusion, occur in devotees and in the Lord, who is the very form of all sweet rasa, arising as Sanchari Bhavas as part of rasa. So these symptoms, these are spiritual emotions, not material. They occur in the devotees and in Krishna, and they are Sanchari Bhavas. Another example, this can be clearly seen in Damodar pastimes. Krishna is crying, and the poor virag of the gopis during Raslila. Fear mentioned in this verse refers to verse 8. Fear is impossible for Krishna. Fear which caused Krishna to flee is not actual fear, as mentioned by Uddhava. If it were real fear, the intelligence of the wise would be erroneous, according to Bhagavatamrita. Such stories prevent the tasting of nectar, like restricting a horse with a halter. So, these are, here again, now Jiva Goswami compares lamentation of Lord Krishna here to the lamentation of Prahlad Maharaj when he was thinking of the poor conditioned souls. Prahlad says, I am happy. I don't have anything. Still, shocheta tovi mukachetasa, I'm lamenting for these poor rascals and fools who are carrying the burden of sense gratification or maya. Or, like Bharata's feelings of compassion, affection for Rahugana. Or, the expression of fear on the part of Sanaka and the four Kumaras because of their having cursed the Lord's personal associates. So these are similar emotions. They're spiritual emotions that Krishna's feeling, compared to the feelings of Prahlad, the feelings of the four Kumaras. So verse 32, by virtue of self-realization, fortified by service rendered to his feet, devotees of the Lord can dispel the bodily concept of life, which has bewildered the soul since time immemorial. Thus they attain eternal glory in his personal association. How then can that supreme truth, the destination of all genuine saints, be subject to illusion? So if devotees can do devotional service and become free from illusion, how can Krishna have illusion in himself? That's the point, purport. As a result of fasting, the body becomes weak and one thinks, I am emaciated. Did you ever have that feeling? Mm-hmm. Similarly, sometimes conditioned... no, somebody never had that feeling. Sometimes a conditioned soul thinks, I am happy or I am unhappy. That's more common. Ideas based on the bodily concept of life. Simply by serving the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, however, devotees become free from this bodily concept of life. So how could such illusion possibly affect the Supreme Personality of Godhead at any time? And so, time out for a philosophical discussion here in the middle of the battle. This always happens. And, yes, time out. With a message from, just like on TV, timeout, message from the sponsor. So we had a message from our sponsor here, the Acharyas, who are giving us some information so we can understand what's going on, not to think that Krishna got bewildered materially. These are spiritual emotions, and they're part of the Leela. Okay, so now we're back to the battle again. I like these timeouts too. While Shalva continued to hurl torrents of weapons at him with great force, Lord Krishna, whose prowess never fails, shot his arrows at Shalva, wounding him and shattering his armor, bow, and crest jewel. Then with his club, the Lord smashed his enemy, Selva, airship. Why waste so many arrows? Just hit it with your club. Anyway, so it's fun to have the battle go on, but then, okay, enough. Just smash it with your club. Srila Prabhupada writes, so if you can imagine the size of the airplane and then Krishna's club, it's very powerful. It's like a city, like a huge city. He's hitting and he's smashing a huge city with his club. Prabhupada writes, Shalva thought Krishna had been bewildered by his mystic representations. He became encouraged and began to attack the Lord with greater strength and energy by showering volumes of arrows upon him. But the enthusiasm of Shalva can be compared to the speedy march of flies into a fire. The speedy march of flies. Yes, sometimes we have seen the speedy march of insects. If you light a candle in the rainy season, if you're out of light. Sometimes we had to do that because there was no electricity. So you light a candle and you see the speedy march of insects into the fire, and they make a sound. And so a speedy march of flies into a fire. Lord Krishna, by hurling his arrows with unfathomable strength, injured Shalva, whose armor, bow, and jeweled helmet all scattered into pieces. With a crashing blow from Krishna's club, Shalva's wonderful airplane burst into pieces and fell into the sea. More powerful than any bomb is Krishna's club. The fact that Shalva's insignificant mystic power could not bewilder Lord Krishna is here emphatically demonstrated. So, shattered into thousands of pieces by Lord Krishna's club, the Shalva airship plummeted into the water. Shalva abandoned it, stationed himself on the ground, took up his club, and rushed toward Lord Achyuta. They never give up. As Shalva rushed at him, the Lord shot a bala dart and cut off his arm that held the club. Having finally decided to kill Shalva, Krishna then raised his Sudarshan disc weapon, which resembled the sun at the time of universal annihilation. The brilliantly shining Lord appeared like the easternmost mountain bearing the rising sun. Easternmost mountain. Where's Udayagiri? Udayagiri. That's where the sun rises at first. First spotted. Employing his disc, Lord Hari removed that great magician's head with its earrings and crown, just as Purandar had used his thunderbolt to cut off Ritra's head. Seeing this, all of Shalva's followers cried out, "Alas! Alas!" With the sinful Shalva now dead and his Shalva airship destroyed, the heavens resounded with kettle drums played by groups of demigods. Then Dantavakra, wanting to avenge the death of his friends, furiously attacked the Lord. And we will hear about that tomorrow. The fight with Dantavakra, who is none other than Vijay. Jain Vijay, Shishupala, and Dantavakra. And with the death of Dantavakra, Krishna will be able to return to Vrindavan. And tomorrow he will return. And everyone will become very happy. So any questions or comments on this chapter? Krishna, Lord Krishna slays Shalva. Yes?
As far as I remember, Sri Krishna Chakravarti comments that there are several versions of this story.
Several versions of the story of Shalva.
And that sage is presented.
Right, this is how some sages present,
but
that Krishna got bewildered. Some say Balaram was in Indraprastha. In Dwarka. Yeah. So when we hear that Balaram was in Dwarka, that is some sages. It wasn't in the verse, actually. It was a commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti. The verse didn't say. Because the verse, I read it in the last chapter, but it was actually what I read was a commentary. So some sages say Balaram was in Dwarka, and some sages say no. So I guess in order to find out, you have to be there. But actually, he did go to Indraprastha. He went. Okay. He did go to Indraprastha. Yeah. He started to fight when Krishna wasn't there, and Balaram. Yeah, he was fighting when they weren't there. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Oh, I guess they both got their heads cut off. So
he was cutting one ear, the head of Vritrasura, and he couldn't.
Anyway, that's because Indra is not God. Yeah, it's not the similarity is in that the heads got cut off, and they were big demons. They were big demons, and their heads got cut off. So that's a similarity. You cannot say everything is analogies can go so far. Any other questions or comments? Okay, tomorrow we will hear about Dantavakra's killing and Krishna's return to Vrindavan.